Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here.
Reminding you that American Family Insurance agents can help build a customized renter's policy.
So you can protect stuff like this.
Or this.
Or even this.
Nope. Case in point.
Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Now playing Open Floor.
This is Open Floor.
Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix back at it.
An NBA podcast with Sports Illustrated senior writer.
I think it's time that the world get to know
my guy Chris Mannix.
I think your opinion is shared by everyone.
And now it begins.
Now it begins.
Bang! Welcome back to the Open Floor Podcast, where we talk about the NBA, and it is finals week in the association. That's right. Thursday night, Celtics-Mavericks tips off in Boston. The Celtics opening up as heavy favorites, but Dallas does have two of the most dynamic offensive players in the league in Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. I think we're going to get a great series. I really do. I think we're going to get a long series. I like Boston, but I think it takes the Celtics seven games to ultimately win it. Going to get into that during this show. Rachel Nichols, longtime NBA reporter, now working at Fox Sports, and she joins me on the pod. We talk a little off the top about the Minnesota Timberwolves. They have gone fishing, as they say, but we have heard a lot about them running it back with this same group. We get into that. We also talk about the pressure that is on Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Six conference finals these two have played in. This will be their second NBA Finals. No, this is not about their relationship. Their relationship is just fine. This is about their ability to win a series like this. And I think calling this a must win for Tatum and Brown is a fair game. We also talk about Kyrie Irving, who is going to face an energized TD Garden crowd on Thursday. We have seen a lot of growth from Kyrie this season, but that maturity, I think, is going to be tested in this kind of environment. Plus, we look at some wild cards that could make a difference in the finals. Before we get to Rachel, though, I know this is an NBA podcast, but can I say I find all the negative energy being directed at Caitlin Clark to be absolutely wild? I mean, I don't pretend to be a WNBA insider. I'm a casual fan. And because of that, I feel comfortable saying that Caitlin Clark is the best thing to happen to the WNBA ever. And that's not a critique of the incredibly talented women who built the foundation of this league. But Caitlin Clark brings the same energy to the WNBA that Steph Curry brought to the NBA. That style of play is really exciting. It draws in viewers. It makes me tune in to WNBA games. I have to call a boxing match in Phoenix on June 29th. The Indiana Fever are playing the Mercury the next night. I'm staying to go. I'm not missing out on an opportunity to watch Caitlin Clark play. This isn't me weighing in on who is right and who is wrong. I mean, I don't care about the hard fouls. That happens. I don't know if players are jealous. I really don't. I just know that she is bringing a legion of new fans into this league. And I say that as one of them. All right. When we come back, I will be joined by Rachel Nichols. All right, Rachel Nichols, before we get into a few specifics of these finals that start on Thursday in Boston, I've been seeing a lot of tweets from Minnesota Timberwolves players. I saw one from Carl Anthony Towns come out on Monday. And look, in kind of fitting Carl Towns form, he made a video saying we're going to run it back. But the video, I think, was sideways. So you had to kind of turn it around on your phone. Only Kat could have something like that sort of happen to him. But look, Anthony Edwards said, we'll be back. Chris Finch said, we'll be back. Carl Towns now saying, we'll be back. I guess my question is, after watching this team go out in five games to Dallas, get blown out the way they did in game five, is this a run it back team to you?
Look, I think that as a franchise, they will be back, no question, because of Anthony Edwards. I am 100% in on Anthony Edwards. I think he's only going to get better. I think, frankly, we've only seen maybe 70% of what he can do. I think as he gets more experienced in the league and his game develops and his ability to sort of the physical stamina and dealing with the spotlight and all of that stuff, you know, just increases, I think he is going to be phenomenal and a superstar, and it's very hard in this league to get superstars. There are franchises that have gone 25 years without getting a true superstar. So I absolutely think as a franchise, as long as they build smartly around him, that they will be back. And Tim Conley is a master of team building. That all being said, are they running it back with this particular team? I don't think they can. I mean, just the numbers don't play out. Right now, with the contracts they're already committed to, they're at $190 million in salary. And then even if you just fill out the rest of the players with minimum guys, it gets you to $200 million. The projected cap is $171 million, I think. And so if you're $30 million over the cap, your luxury tax bill is going to be around $70 million. This is an ownership, and I know the ownership is being contested right now, and we'll see which way it falls. But I don't see, if the new owners come in, I don't see them right off the bat spending $70 million in luxury tax. And I know that Glenn Taylor is not going to spend $70 million in luxury tax. I think in the 30 years he's owned the team, he's spent $25 million in luxury tax over those amortized over those 30 years. So they're going to have to do something. You know, Naz Reid is going to become a free agent next summer. You know, he's on an expiring. How do you deal with that? Rudy Gobert is up for an extension this summer. Are you committing more money? I mean, there's just a lot of questions there. And, you know, you brought up Cat. I mean, he's kind of considered the odd man out if they have to get rid of a bunch of salary. The only thing I'm curious about, and you have a better handle on this stuff, is there someone in the league who wants to take on 4 years of Karl-Anthony Towns' max money?
Yeah, I mean, I was kicking this around with some NBA people the last week or so since the Wolves got eliminated. And the two teams I can think of, one is New York, because New York's always kind of in that mix for the next big star. And I'm sure they'd move Randall and whatever they have to
I don't know. Tibbs had Cat in Minnesota.
He did. I feel like the Knicks, though, I mean, they had a great run, right? But there kind of feels like a ceiling to that team.
Yeah.
And I don't think the ceiling is a championship. So if the guys that the Knicks want, namely Giannis and Embiid, if they're not on the table, I think they might be willing to make a run. The other team that I was thinking of, and I don't have any inside information that they'd even want it, but Oklahoma City. We just saw the Thunder go out in the second round. And look, you know Sam Presti. Like, he's using every minute of those playoffs as data points.
Yes.
Like, what does this team need?
100%.
And they obviously need rebounding. They need a little bit more front court scoring. I can envision Towns fitting in alongside Chet Holmgren pretty well. They've got young players that they could put in a deal on cheap contracts. They've got 407 draft picks over the next 10 years that they can move as well. Like, that to me, Oklahoma City makes some sense, as long as Minnesota can get a player back that doesn't force them to take a big step back, right? Like, you don't want to take on a couple of, you know, seventh, eighth, ninth guys on the Oklahoma City roster just to, you know, just to get Cat off your books. Yeah, you're not going to get Jalen Williams, but maybe you need somebody like on that level to make this make sense from a basketball perspective. But those are the two teams that jumped to mind for me when I thought of Towns deals.
Yeah, no, I mean, we'll just have to see. I mean, Cat obviously wants to come back, so I don't know where that's going to fit into things. But yeah, they're going to have some really hard decisions to make. I like the Oklahoma City idea. They need size, obviously. I mean, I think that's the biggest lesson we've learned in the Western Conference in general, is that, you know, you need size, and that, you know, the good teams have it. And if you don't have it, you're not going to compete. I mean, Chet is amazing, but he's not a big guy in that way. I mean, it's not going to blow anyone off the court. So I just think they do need to beef that up a little bit. So I could see that. But yeah, I mean, I think in Minnesota, they've got a real conundrum. Fortunately, again, I think the architect of that team is very good at this kind of puzzle piece fitting. He's the guy who built the Denver Nuggets, then hopped over to Minnesota, made a trade that everyone sort of panned. I mean, I think it got like D plus grades. Oh, yeah. I was looking around the other day at the great trade grades when that trade was made. Obviously did not work out the first season, got more sort of flack for having done it. And then boom, you know, he knew to be patient with it. And that chemistry got them as far as the Western Conference Finals, which is huge for that franchise. I mean, that's a huge advance for a franchise that I don't think had won a playoff series in 20 years. So I think they should be really happy with what they did. I think they will, out of necessity, need to tweak that team. But as long as the goal in mind is keep building around Anthony Edwards to have his perfect strengths and the guys who make up for the things he can't do and how to feature him, I think they'll be fine. And that's kind of a no-brainer. I can sit here on a couch and say that. So I know Tim Connelly knows that.
Yeah, and I heard a lot of, you know, they built the team that can beat Denver, but they didn't build the kind of team that can beat Dallas. I don't really agree with that because they've got elite defenders. Like Jaden McDaniels defends. Anthony Edwards defends. Nikhil Alexander-Walker defends. Like these are big, sturdy wing defenders that they have. They just ran into two guys in Luka and Kyrie that were just better in that series. And I look at Kat as being you know, just questionable. I mean, look at his numbers, 38% from the floor in that series, 25% from three. It wasn't until game four, Rachel, that he realized I can go to the basket and have success. And then he goes out in game five and shoots 1 for 6 from three. So he's the guy like with the spotlight directly on him this offseason.
Yeah. And I think he knows that. I mean, look, I 100% think they're built to beat teams like Dallas. In this series, Dallas had the better player. I mean, I love the NBA media. It is amazing to see like how short-term everything has become. I think there's pressure on everyone to have their takes and to say something new and all of that. But I saw a ton of discussions going into the Western Conference Finals. You know, who has the best player? Is Ant better than Luka? Guess what? No, not even close. I mean, this was just mind-blowing to me in the moment. I was like, no. Luka is very clearly the best player, guys. And, you know, we saw that. Now, there will be a point, again, Ant, in certain matchups, is already the best player in a series. And there will be a point, I think, by the time he's 25 years old, where he has that unquestioned vibe that Luka has of sort of, no, he's the best player. And when they have a best player, that would help them with all the defensive skill that they have. That would help them against teams like Dallas. But they just don't have that guy yet. That guy is still developing. And I think Ant is right on time. He shouldn't be further along at 22 than he is. And he's already really shown us some spectacular things. He's only going to get better. And as long as they're smart about how they build around him, I don't see them having any problem with any team.
Yeah, just big offseason for them. They've got to make some decisions, no question. But I do think with that core, they've got, if they can keep it together some way, somehow, they've got a good chance of being right back there next year. All right, I don't want to ask you about the Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown dynamic, because every time I hear a debate on it, I'm like the human Homer Simpson meme where he's going back into the
bushes.
The bushes, yeah. I just want to jump off my roof every time I hear, like, are they really friends? Of course they are. They've been teammates this long and never once had a problem with each other.
I was going to say, also, who cares?
Exactly. They're very different people. Like, I've been around those guys for their entire career. I mean, Jason, You know, Jaylen, we've seen his activism. He's very involved 100%. In the community. Jason is too, but he's also like a typical 20-something, right? Like, they're just
Laid back.
Yeah, they're just different, but they're completely fine as teammates. I do think, though, Rachel, when we talk about these finals, I don't think there's a duo in the NBA with more pressure on them than Tatum and Brown, because this will be their sixth time going to at least an Eastern Conference Finals, their second time playing in an NBA Finals. They're big favorites coming into this one. And I look around the duos, including Kyrie and Luka. You know, Kawhi, PG, yeah, definitely pressure on them. Giannis, Dame, sure. Embiid, Maxi, not really there yet. But these two, being at the stage of the career that they're in and the matchup that they're facing right now, I think there is an enormous amount of pressure on them to get it done. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I think they're far and away under more pressure than any of those other duos you mentioned. And it's a victim of their own success, right? That they got onto the national stage so young, and Jason Tatum blew us all away with his Kobe aura and, you know, on court, not the same personality off the court, obviously, but Kobe was the guy he watched and wanted to pattern his game after, and it worked. I mean, he just was not afraid to take shots. He was so spectacular when he sort of came onto the national stage, you know, very endearing with Deuce and the, you know, the family and the whole thing. But the problem is that if you have that early success and it takes you, in this case, 8 years to pay it off, people are going to be like, all right, let's go. When is it? When's it happening? And, you know, I think they know that. I saw a quote from Jason Tatum yesterday where he said, I'm looking at this as our second chance. This is my second chance to get it right. I know that it didn't go right the last time. So they're aware of all of that. They certainly know what people are saying about them. Those guys are online. I mean, they get it. I just don't think that it's going to be as much of a factor in what happens on the court in this series as some people do. I think that those guys have been through it before. They've been told that they're, you know, can't do anything right basically for the entire season. so if they're told in the finals they're not doing everything right, I don't think it's going to affect them in the same way it did 2 years ago. So I don't think that's going to be huge. You know, the question is where pressure really kicks in is at the end of games, right? So we saw in the Golden State series, even though their overall clutch numbers were good, that when they got to the really important games where it mattered the most, they fell apart at the end. And we saw that throughout the regular season at times over these past few years. So that's the concern. And that's where the pressure thing comes in. I just feel like Jrue Holiday is an intensely calming presence on the court, and he's not going to fall apart in the last 5 minutes of a game. And, you know, I just think it's a new sort of mix on this team. And I think Jason and Jaylen, I would not bet on them to fall apart at the end of games. If that's what you're counting on, I would not count on that, because I think they've been through it enough that that's not going to be the defining storyline. Now, are they going to be perfect, or are they sometimes going to snarf up a lead? Like, absolutely. And Dallas can make you do that, but it's not the thing I would base my prediction on. So, you know, they were the number one clutch team throughout these playoffs so far. Dallas was number three. You know, I hope these games come down to being close at the end and we get to see these guys battle it out, you know, in that what the last 3 minutes takes 20 minutes, right? Because of all the timeouts, but hopefully no reviews. But, you know, I hope that that's what it comes down to. But I wouldn't count on those guys to fall apart because of the pressure. I just don't think that's there this year in the same way.
Yeah, and I think they needed these playoffs to sharpen their edge, right? Like, they had one of the great point differentials in NBA history this season. They didn't play like a meaningful regular season game since like Ash Wednesday. Like, you had to go like way back to, I mean, they were just, you know, coasting throughout the end of the regular season. You get into the playoffs and they had, you know, one or two close games against Cleveland, you know, conference finals. They play some close games against Indiana. I think that is going to prepare them for this particular matchup. I know we were saying at the start of the playoffs that when we're talking about the Lakers, like, the best time to get Denver might be in the first round. I think the best time to have gotten Boston was probably the first round, because that was when they were probably at their most vulnerable. I don't think they're vulnerable right now. I do think, Rachel, this is a big series for Jaylen Brown, because he's going to have to be the two-way player, right? Like, I think he's going to get a lot of those early reps on Luka Doncic based on what we've seen during the regular season. And we know the Celtics rotation. It's like 6, 7, occasionally 8 guys deep with Porzingis back. Like, Brown's going to play a heavy minutes load too. So if we're like making the pressure meter, so to speak, I think a lot of it's going to fall on Jaylen, because he's going to have to do everything on both ends of the floor.
Well, first of all, I just want to call out your Ash Wednesday reference, because that's as Boston as you get. So, 100%. You know, congratulations on being true to type. I mean, look, I don't worry as much about pressure with Jaylen Brown, but I do worry about exhaustion, right? I mean, you know, if he's on Luka a lot of the time, then Luka moves around, and Luka's not super fast with his pace, but he does wear you out. He's a big guy. And if you're bumping against him over and over again, and the Celtics, you know, from some of the things they said, and again, you're around that team more than anyone, you know, it seems like they're going to want to pick up Luka full court. And, you know, I thought Luka was fascinating in that Game 5. I mean, obviously he was on one, but there were several times he like motioned for the pressure. It was like, he was like, you know, a bull, you know, the matador with the bull. He's like, yeah, come get me. And then it was, you know, to use all my references, it was like Top Gun. Remember when he's like, I'll slam the brakes and it'll fly right by.
I saw
Luka do that like 3 times in that game. And I think he will try that this game. And I think the Celtics will try to pressure him a lot of the time. So whoever has that assignment, that is going to be tiring. Whoever has the Kyrie assignment is going to be tiring. Kyrie has added a lot of like motion without the ball and cuts and things to his game over the last couple of years. And he's in the best shape I've seen him in a very long time. So I think, you know, it's certainly the Celtics who have the defensive edge here. If you look at their individual defenders, I mean, they just have more guys who can match up with those guys than anyone Dallas has faced so far, but they will get tired. They will get tired defending those guys. So I worry about that with the Jaylen Brown or someone else, you know, on that roster more than I do about, oh my God, the pressure is going to get to him.
You know, when Luka waves guys in and invites the pressure to dip into my other sport. It kind of reminds me of a boxer after he takes a big punch, because I don't always believe it, right? Like a boxer sometimes will say, like, I didn't feel that. He'll shake his head.
Right.
It's kind of like with Luka, where like, bring the pressure. I don't think he wants to be pursued 75 feet from the basket. I think that's the right strategy for Boston. I think they should. Now the question is, do they have enough depth to do it? Like, do you have to send O'Shea Brissett out there for 5 minutes to hound him around the floor? Like, I don't think so, but the concern is valid about fatigue setting in if you're putting all that pressure on Luka Doncic and you're only playing a 7, maybe 8-man rotation. You mentioned Kyrie Irving, though, and this is going to be fascinating. Like, the hostility, Rachel, in the Garden on Thursday is going to be next level, because this fandom, and I love them. Look, I'm from Boston. Yeah. Like, this fandom, they're great. But, like, they're in their second finals in the last 3 years, and none of them can let go what happened in the 18-19 season. Like, none of them. And every single one of them blames Kyrie Irving for it. Now, Kyrie has kind of leaned into the villain role in years past. He said some things about the town. He stepped on Lucky the after 2021. I mean, he has, you know, if he doesn't want to be known as a villain, he's done a pretty good job of becoming one in these moments. But he has, like, when I talk to people that know Kyrie, you know, former and current teammates, he's the kind of guy that likes being liked, right? He doesn't like necessarily all the negativity. And I think there's a pattern there. Like, you know, when he left Cleveland, how long did it take him to go back? I know he played the opener for the Celtics in that first game, but then he, you know, oftentimes he wouldn't play in Cleveland. And I think some of that had to do with kind of the negativity that would have been around him. And, you know, since that series, the 5-game win for the Nets back in 2021, Kyrie's 0-10 against the Celtics in the teams that he's played for. I think his ability to be efficient offensively, reasonably sturdy defensively, and to drown out all the stuff on the outside, not engage with the fans that are going to be going after him, I think that's just huge for the Mavericks. What do you think?
Yeah, 100%. And look, I'm not defending his years in between his Boston and Brooklyn years at all, but I will point out the 0-10 is just a little bit manipulated. The quality of teams he was on versus the Celtics, who have been operating at such a high level, it is a little bit, you know, it's a correlation without causation, or whatever we say, you know, that kind of thing. Look, I've spent a decent amount of time around Kyrie this year. I've spent a lot of time with him throughout his entire career, and you know, he and I had a pretty big interview sit down toward the beginning of the season, and it was the most, I told him, I said, this is the most comfortable I have ever seen you, and I have covered you since the moment you got in the league. And he was like, yeah, that's how I feel. You know, he said to me when I was asking him about, you know, just kind of focusing on basketball and how Jason Kidd had been encouraging him to do that after all the drama in Brooklyn. He said, yeah, he said, I had a great quote. He said, I've learned not to touch the stove when it's hot. And I thought that was a great sentence. And, you know, Jason had told me that his philosophy with Kyrie is, don't encourage him to be a cookie cutter, just basketball only guy. You know, he's got so many interests. He's so smart. You know, he really sees basketball as an art form, and that he's, you know, painting, you know, his legend out there on the court, which I think I see it with him 100%. So don't cut that out of him. Don't encourage him to, you know, kind of, oh, I'm a robot, but just encourage him to do basketball in his way, but make it about basketball. And I think that's been tremendously successful. I think he and Luka are the perfect combination. You know, when he left Cleveland, there was a lot of chafing with him and LeBron over the fact that he was a guy who was a number one pick. He was the unquestioned star of the team before LeBron came back. You know, LeBron certainly treated him a little bit, you know, sunned him a little bit. There was a little bit of that stuff going on. And, you know, Kyrie thought he should be, you know, if not 1A, you know, and instead he was being treated like, you know, 2B, basically, in his mind. And that dynamic is just not there with Luka, because they're at totally different stages of their careers. Luka, you know, is obviously the number one. Kyrie will say that up and down. You don't even ask him and he says it, that, you know, Luka's the star of this team. And Kyrie is fine with that, because he feels that, like, Luka can elevate the final parts of his career. And he does something that Luka can't do. Luka is not I don't want to say he's not a leader, because I think anyone who leads by example on the court like that is a kind of leader, but he's not a locker room leader. he is not interested in sitting down and having heart-to-hearts with guys. He's not interested in teaching the rookies, sort of the young players, how to go about their business. That's just not him. That's not his style. And he's only 25. I mean, he's still figuring all that stuff out. Kyrie, and this is, I know, the opposite of what happened in Boston, where he was supposed to be a guide and mentor for the young players. He has been incredible there. He has been such a locker room leader. He is the guy everyone goes to. He is Jason's kid's right hand and sort of managing, you know, things on team dynamics. I think that has been really remarkable to watch, their partnership. When we talk about the tuning things out in Boston, I mean, look, he's had to hear it for a long time. They threw a water bottle at him, right? One game. And I'm sure, you know, there might be something flying on the court this time. I mean, you just don't know. Like, it is a very dedicated fan base, I will say that. But I think Kyrie is best equipped to deal with this than he's ever been. And he's very zen about, like, oh yeah, that's what's going to happen. And he's talked publicly about the fact that he has off-court ways to deal with his problems now, and that he didn't have that when he was in Boston. And it all got pent up, whether it was the death of his grandfather, whether it was dynamics on the team. You know, he wasn't dealing with his emotions. And everyone knows when you're like that, it's going to come out in a bad way. And that's us in life. Like, it's not just basketball players. And now he has a pretty regular outlet for the things that he's dealing with on and off the court. And that has left him feeling very free. I have a question for you. Do you think that the Boston crowd going after Kyrie is going to fire up Luka? Because we saw Luka in that game 5.
I think it might. But again, does it overcome potentially Kyrie getting rattled by it? And that's still an outstanding question for me. Like, I agree with you. His maturity in Dallas has been a revelation. You know, some of that I'm sure was, you know, a reality check, you know, going into last offseason where it was Dallas or bust, basically, you know, at least when it comes to getting a lucrative offer. But when I talk to Mavericks coaches, all the things you're saying, they reiterate. I mean, one thing that one of them told me recently was, you know, when Kyrie came back from that nasty looking leg injury, I believe early January, like one thing they said was not only was he coming back going full speed offensively, but he was defending as best he could on that end of the floor. Like, he was bringing it defensively, which you didn't always see and don't always see from Kyrie Irving. He has been a leader in that locker room to the guys like Derek Lively and the other guys, the other younger guys on that team, which is a full 180 from what he did in Boston. And he talked about this, you know, during the conference finals about how he's recognized that there are different ways to be a leader. You know, it's not just me. Like, he was like, and I'm sure you've heard some of these, but like some of the stories about Kyrie in Boston are wild. Like, some of the things he did and some of the things he said. Like, I wrote about one last week where, you know, during that 18-19 season, someone brought up the fact that the Celtics have some winners in that locker room. One of them was Al Horford, who won 2 championships at Florida.
Sure.
And Kyrie said, not the same. Some of them was an assistant coach, had won a championship in Europe. Kyrie said, not the same. So he did do some crazy things in Boston that interrupted that locker room. But he's learned from them. He has learned from all of them. And that's now made him the player he is today. I think it's just big for Kyrie, Rachel, to just not engage, to try your best to tune it all up. Because when he does engage, you know, that's when you can lead to bad shooting nights. That's when you can, you know, just not have your full focus. And look, the Mavericks are underdogs in this series. Yeah. That's the reality.
And heavy underdogs.
If they're going to win, it's going to be because Kyrie and Luka are outstanding for 4 games in the series.
Yeah, 100%. Look, I think the Mavericks not only have to play their best to win this series, they'd have to play that best would have to be a level up from anything we've seen so far. And what we've seen so far is really good. The Celtics are just, they're a deeper team. And they have individual defenders who can match up with Luka and Kyrie. Now, I don't think anyone's stopping Luka Doncic, so no one's shutting him down. But we did see Oklahoma City do some things to Kyrie during that series that kept him averaging 15 points a game. And I can see them scheming Kyrie, and I can see them just throwing body after body at Luka when you have Drew Holiday, when you have Derek White, when you have Jaylen Brown. That's a tremendous luxury. And Jason Tatum can defend too. So I just think that that's going to be a lot to overcome. I'm not saying they can't do it. I think this is going to be a super entertaining series, and entertaining series mean that either team could win, but they are an underdog. I mean, there's just no way around that. And that, in fact, they're such an underdog. I heard Bill Simmons sort of giving historical perspective that they would be one of the, you know, if you look back at point differential through the season and some other, you know, a bunch of other stats, they would be, I think, the third biggest underdog to win a title in NBA history, just that where they are compared to where the Celtics have been. So, you know, I think all of that's interesting. And I think Luka and Kyrie are really poised to take that and do have their way with things. I just think the Celtics want their way with things too. And I think they've got more weapons to do it. And emotionally, I just feel, and you, again, like you have a better sense of the Boston environment. I just think they're more equipped to deal with that pressure you were talking about at the beginning of this conversation. I just think they're ready, man. I feel like they've dealt with the bullshit. They've been disappointed in themselves. They've learned from their mistakes. They just feel to me like a team that is ready to win a title. And I don't know if you feel that way, but you know, it just feels very obvious to me.
Yeah, I mean, they've been through the fire, right? They've mm-hmm. taken their lumps, much the same way Denver took its lumps before mm-hmm. last season's championship run. Boston has taken theirs, maybe more than they needed to take. You know, they probably should have won that series against Miami, but you know, we know what happened last season with the Ime Udoka stuff and everything that kind of made that a bizarre season. But this is, if they're not ready to win a championship now, they may never be ready to win a championship with this team. It's their point. Last thing for you. There's always a wild card, right? There's always like mm-hmm. a guy that plays extremely well or something that comes up that turns out to be a difference maker in one or more of these games. When you look at both these teams, like what is the wild card for either one? What's the unknown that could change the course of this series?
I think you got to look at the bigs, and we've talked ad nauseum about what Kristaps Porzingis has added to this team and what he will when we all expect him to come back in the finals. My question about KP isn't, is he good enough? My question is, will he, after not playing for so long, at least for the first few games of the series, be in a rhythm to be his full self? And he could be, which is great. You know, I really want to see him succeed as a player. He's someone who's been through a lot and learned a lot and improved a lot. But that might not be the case. And I think that is the wild card on Boston's side, because they absolutely need him, and they need him to play well for this to work for them. So I think he'll be back. I just don't know which version of him we're going to get. So that's the wild card question for me. And then again, the bigs on Dallas's side, we know what Luka and Kyrie are going to bring you. I want to know what Maxi Kleber, who is also coming back from an injury, he at least got some run in Game 4 and 5 in the Timberwolves series. So I think he'll have his feet under him by the time we get to the finals, but he's a very important part of their team. And, you know, the fact that they were able to do so far in this playoffs, what they have done without him is actually something that's been underreported to me. I think that that's a huge, huge accomplishment. And if he is able to come back and really contribute, you know, they have a lot more flexibility with him on the floor. Derek Lively is a revelation. And by the way, just a good kid. I mean, he is just a tremendous person. And the stuff that he's dealt with this year with his mother dying and his ability to come back and sort of handle all of that has been super impressive. I had a very long conversation with him during the Western Conference Finals where he was just, everything he said was exactly what you would want to hear. But he's not as you know, well-rounded a player as Maxi is. So I think if Maxi can come back strong, that will help them. And if KP can come back strong, that will make a big difference. But it is unknown with both of those guys, you know, coming off those injuries.
Yeah, the Lively thing to me is interesting on Dallas's side, because he's been so good during these playoffs. Mm-hmm. And you saw what they were when he missed that Game 4 against Minnesota. Like, I mean, he's at such a young age, he is such a trusted figure, you know, both by Jason Kidd and by, you know, Luka and Kyrie. Like, they're not hesitating to throw lobs to him.
Nope.
You know, when those double teams come. Like, does he get overwhelmed by the moment? Like, I've seen some of his interviews. He's very excited about playing the finals. He's very excited about playing against Jason Tatum. Like, but is he too excited? Yes. Like, does it get to him in these types of games? Like, they're going to need him to be the guy he's been all playoffs. I'm going to throw one at you from the Celtics side. Sam Hauser. Like, I think Sam Hauser's got to play some minutes in this series. If for no other reason, then you got to give Jaylen Brown a blow. You've got to give Jason Tatum a blow at some point. Sam Hauser's numbers in the conference finals were awful, like truly awful. 14, what did he shoot? 12.5% from the floor. 7.1% from three. Like, these are wild numbers for Sam Hauser.
I didn't
Hauser.
Know it was that bad.
Oh, for a guy that is known as one of the best three-point shooters in the NBA, he made one three in those conference finals, and that was in game four against Indiana. He's got to be a threat for this team offensively. He's got to shoot in the 40% for three-point range, because they're going to target him defensively when he's out there, whether it's with Kyrie 100%. Or any of the wings. Sam Hauser, to me, maybe they can win with him, you know, not playing well. They are going to be a little deeper with Horford probably going to the bench with Porzingis, you know, back in the mix. Yeah. But he's going to have to play some minutes at that wing position. This is going to be a hot take. He can't shoot 7.1% from three, Rachel. I'm going to say that right
now.
Wow. He cannot
shoot 7.1%. That basketball insight, this is what I
can't get that anywhere else.
How many decades in the league that you've covered. I really appreciate that kind of approach. I mean, look, I think you're completely right. And obviously one of the great strengths Boston has in this series is their three-point shooting. That Dallas has been winning defensively by packing the paint. They can't do that in this series, right? Because every ball will get kicked out, and Boston has not only taken, but made. I think that's the stat. People are like, oh, they just take so many threes. Yeah, but they've made the most threes of anyone else in the NBA. They are the leaders on that, both in the regular season and the playoffs, I think. I know the playoffs for sure. So I just think that he's got to be part of that. There's no question. But you and I have seen shooters get in shooting slumps, and then all it takes is one hot quarter, and they're out of it, right? And then all of a sudden, and we saw it a little bit with Kat, you know, in the last round, that he had a terrible shooting night the first three games, and it was really a big part of what they were missing. And then he woke up in game four and you know, acquitted himself fine in game five for a blowout. I mean, for what was happening overall, he certainly was able to shoot some baskets. So I just think with Sam, I have to imagine it's like any other shooter in his position, he's going to be really bad until he's good again. And then he has potential to be really good.
Just don't steal my Sam Hauser take this week, Rachel. That's mine.
And it's all yours.
Better than if
7% bad. 7% bad.
Has to make more than one three in these finals. That's for sure.
I learned so much from you, Chris.
I know. I try to be informative to the audience, but that's the best I can do. Rachel, I appreciate you taking some time to join me.
I will see you
in Boston this week. Yes. I know hotels are very cheap, because I think the NBA might want to explore asking some of the colleges to push back graduation.
I think that's fine to not bankrupt
media members. Exactly. Coming into this town. Appreciate your time, Rachel.
See you soon.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.